Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to the 253rd episode of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Kyle Barton of Waterfront Winters, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Tiami Plotke of the Penultimate Woodshop and Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you, Kyle? I'm doing fine myself.
Good, good. Of course, people could be listening to this in the morning, so good morning.
Good morning. Good day. Good afternoon.
Who would listen to a woodworking podcast in the morning?
Commute?
Happy 4th of July. Merry Christmas. All of these.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So what's going on, guys?
Not a whole bunch.
Yeah. Now, Sean, you had something that piqued your interest on the interwebs.
I did. You know, are you all familiar with Paul Jackman?
Yes. We had him on, 9 months ago or so?
Right. I mean, he does a lot of palette work, but I have a special place in my viewing heart of his giant sized stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he just released a Jackman sized jack plane that he had. I think he took it to a maker fair. I don't know what show he actually took it to. And I don't know if you guys, per chance, saw it in any of the events that you visited, but that thing is freaking awesome. Three times the size jack plane.
I didn't see the plane in person, but I have seen his Nutcracker in person.
Okay. Yeah, and like it's got the screwdriver and a Stanley knife and this video, because it's really detailed, and it was super fun to see him working on all the parts. And I know, you know, being a hand toolish kind of guy, the frog and everything inside a plane, seeing it done in like the size of like everything's like the size of a shoebox on this plane is just enormous. It was really, really cool to see.
What did he do for a blade for that?
He had another guy whose name escapes me at this moment make an actual blade. He said it was nearly 2 feet long. It was like 6 inches wide. Mm-hmm. And it actually took shavings.
It wasn't Tony Rouleau, was it?
No, it wasn't Tony Rouleau. It was Zach something.
Oh, Zach. Yes, I could not even begin to. He's from... he does the podcast with James Wright and William Walker.
Really? Okay,
Makers Collective.
He's a metal fabricator.
Yes, he is.
Right, and so I mean, I don't know what all it took to make that blade.
It's ZH Fabrications, and I could not even begin to pronounce his last name, but it starts with an H.
Okay, it's not like Hartzell or something simple like that. Okay, super cool. And for that too, the collaboration with an actual bladesmith that could make, or at least metal worker that could make a blade that at that size is sharp enough to take even a coarse shaving. Pretty darn cool.
Now I could use that to surface the top of this entertainment center.
Yes, yeah.
in just a few passes. But yeah, it would probably take the strength of a horse to push through at full width though.
I'll just sharpen it real well.
Okay. Go for it.
All right.
Put a hell of a camber on that.
But no, if you've never, and I hope everyone has, his videos, the editing is fantastic. It's just, they're all fun.
That's it. They are all fun. That's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the guy does as a career.
This.
Yes. He just makes YouTube props. I mean, that's legitimately what they are, which is awesome. We could all be so lucky.
Yeah, I know. He does some interesting stuff, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And a great personality there, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. He's always a good follow. But yeah, I saw that. But and then I guess he's making, what's he doing now? It's a giant, he's already done the giant carpet knife, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mean just a utility blade knife?
Yeah.
That was the first giant one, wasn't it?
Was that? I thought the screwdriver might have been.
Well, I know the.
Well, no. Technically, the Adirondack chair might have been his first gigantic size thing.
Yeah.
That fits. three grown men. You know?
Exactly.
But yeah, it's always fun.
Well, since we last talked, I went ahead and broke my woodworking budget for the next couple of months. Yes, me. I ordered two new spokeshaves from Caleb James. So I'm sure you're all familiar with him. So he has a standard spokeshave and a round shave, which is kind of like the standard spokeshave, but it's for getting into extremely tight curved surfaces. And so I went ahead and ordered both of those. So I check his site periodically, and he happened to put some up for pre-order. Unfortunately, I wasn't the first to get there. So I think if you make them out of beech, that's the cheapest or less expensive spokeshave. But so I believe I got the standard spokeshave in apricot, and then the round shave in, I think, let me click on it. I think it's persimmon. Yep. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. Supposedly I should be shipping in August. So we'll see how far down I am on the build list. But so hopefully by August, early fall, I'll have a couple of new spoke shaves. I've haven't tried the round shave out, but I have tried his other one at a class I was taking, and it just made just fabulous cuts.
And how many spoke shaves do you have now?
One, two, three. This will make four and five, I believe. Yeah. Okay. But what's interesting is his standard spokeshave is kind of like a standard low angle spokeshave. Mm-hmm. And I have Lee Valley's metal version of a low angle spokeshave, and I tend to gravitate towards that. So
I want to say I have that too.
Yeah. And, you know, also have the Veritas, you know, flat and rounded spokeshave. I like those. Those are fine. But these are really nice shavings. And then the round shave is actually a bevel up design. A bevel down design. So it allows you to get into those really tight areas. So should be interesting. I know a couple of people that do have the round shave, and they say that's absolutely as fantastic as his regular one, if not more so. So I'm excited about that.
Cool.
Can I ask what that set you back?
I think
round numbers.
About $500 for both of them. Yeah.
All right.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. I broke my budget for the next couple of months. So anyway, there's really only one more. Gotta have a chair making tool I want, and that's it's a place in England, the Windsor Workshop, I believe it is, and he makes a travisher, and it's kind of a interesting looking travisher, and I hear it's really great for hogging off a lot of material fast, kind of between Claire Minihan's travishers and a Scorp. So I'm interested to get my hands on one of those. I haven't seen one of those in the wild over here yet, but a lot of chair makers have bought them and say they're pretty good.
Hmm. I'll keep my eye out for one next month.
But with that said, so what's in the shop? Diami, what are you working on?
Lately, it's just been the fence, and I'm at the point right now where my bandsaw is free, and I'm always... There's so many things I don't do because I've got crap sitting in the shop and I just can't reach my tools. And mm-hmm. I take a special delight when my tools are actually accessible and I can just walk in and do something and leave. So we have a multi-line clothesline. It kind of mm-hmm. coils up and is on the side of the house. You pull it out and I think it's six lines all in parallel. They're like 6 inches apart.
Okay.
It was on the house when we bought it 10 years ago. I've never actually unfurled it, but I know what it is. And so we got home from camping of all places on Sunday, and I needed to hang out the rain flies for the tents, and I was like, well, why don't I just use this? It's actually not raining on us. So I pulled this out, and I was draping the rain flies over the lines, but they just stick to each other. You don't get any air in the middle. So I grabbed a scrap of 1/8-inch plywood and just in like 2 minutes on the bandsaw cut these spacers that are like 1 inch wide and about 6 inches long and have V's cut into the two ends. so I could stick them in between two of the lines and throw the rainfly over it. And they're just enough to hold the lines apart so that you get air in the middle. Yeah. And it was just the stupidest, simplest thing, but it was exactly what I needed, and it took no time to make, and it was just there, and it was just really handy. So not a whole lot of actual dedicated chop time, but I found that to just be a little delight to be able to just do that quickly and get what I wanted.
And we can find these clothesline separators in your Etsy store, right?
Of course.
Yes. Okay.
Mind you, they if you would like them sanded, you have to do that yourself. They come unfinished.
Well, you know, you're trying to keep costs down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What have you been up to, Kyle?
Well, I've been working on the rocker and knocking out some chair parts. And one of the things that dawned on me, it did dawn on me a few weeks ago, but I needed a tenon cutter for posts. So for the arm post and the back post, it's similar to the legs. It goes into a conical mortise, but that conical mortise is a lot smaller than it is for the legs. And I have a tenon cutter for the legs, so I need to make one a little bit smaller for posts. So the way you do that is Tim Manning, who I got my reamer from, he has an excellent thing on his blog about how to make a matching tenon cutter. So
to match his reamer. So the reamer makes the reamer. Mortise. And
exactly.
Okay.
So you drill a hole in the wood and you ream it out, and that's basically your blank for your tenon cutter. And once you have that done, then you basically plane away the wood till there's just a little slit there at the top of the tapered hole, and you can put a plane blade on top of that and make a tenon cutter out of it. So anyone that's interested, it's fairly easy to do. It takes a couple hours. But I do recommend, I've been using, well, the first one I made, I had an extra blade for my Veritas bevel up jack plane, and I used that. And that seemed to work really well, so I just ordered another one of those blades, which, golly, I want to say it's like $37 is fairly reasonable for a blade, A2 blade. And they're super thick and works like a charm, really does. So,
Is it useful to have a second blade, or you want to leave the plane set up and you don't,
That's why I ordered a new blade. It's just so once I assemble this tenon cutter, it's ready to go. So the only time I really need to disassemble it is to sharpen the blade because it can be a little finicky to set up. And by finicky, I mean, it takes you about 4 or 5 minutes to get it, set up correctly, but it's a lot easier than having to go back and forth. Hey, this one's already set up, ready to go. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, I have probably reamed close to, I want to say probably 10 to, oh, let's see, probably about 16 or so legs with my current leg tenon cutter between sharpenings, and I just did it earlier this evening or earlier today, and it's still fine. So, you really don't have to sharpen them that much, at least in my experience.
Now, are you putting a round leg in there, and this is just making a taper at the end, right? You're not starting with a square stock.
Yeah, I guess maybe I should explain that. So, you're basically, you turn a leg. Let's use a leg instead of a post. So you turn a leg, and at the top of that leg, you need to have a tapered tenon. Now, I've actually cut those on the lathe, but it's kind of persnickety to do so. You've got to be really careful, and it's easy to make a mistake and ruin the leg. So what you can do is just get it close and then take it to this tenon cutter, and then the tenon cutter will finish it off and create a tapered mortise or tapered tenon that is exactly the same as the mortise. So it just fits in like a glove.
Okay.
Yeah. So, some people do them on the lathe, and I've done them before on the lathe, and that will work fine. I just find this a little bit more exacting and a little bit easier and quicker. So, Sean, what have you been up to?
So, we it's not a whole lot of actual custom work, but we assembled a beehive.
Oh, cool.
My wife has an interest in raising bees.
Okay.
Probably for the honey. And
you mean the stuff that the bees make, not you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so she got a kit. I mean, it was it's like a waxed pine, I think, maybe southern yellow pine box, but it holds these less disturbance to the bees honeycomb things. It's just a way that you don't have to actually take the whole thing out to shake out the honey and to break the comb apart. It has a plastic system inside it that, without taking them out of the said box, you can turn a little thing and it will disrupt the combs, basically kind of shift them half and half, and the honey just pours down.
Cool.
And so you just kind of have a little spout at the end and it pours out of it while the bees are still living in there.
But if you do it that way, how will you get stung?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get stung plenty.
So this is like an earthquake generator for your beehive.
Yes, except the operation of opening it or draining it is literally a flat bar that you put in and twist. Hmm. And that raises or lowers the section inside.
Okay.
And it's separated, and I don't know anything about beehives normally, but the lower section is where the queen stays, apparently. Mm-hmm. And so there's actually a physical separator to keep her from coming up into that area. Hmm. And so it's only the workers that can enter at the top and get in, and they do their little dance. And anyway, it's kind of a weird little system. But it was a nice kind of, like, it was pre-cut, but it was a dovetailed box to slam all together. And my sons and I worked to squeeze it all in. Now, we don't have the hive or the nuke, I think is what they call when you purchase bees. You get a queen and friends.
Okay.
And
gentlemen callers, if you will.
Gentlemen callers, if you will. And we're going to, because we received it now, we put it together purely to know that we had everything that we needed.
Okay.
And we're going to kind of do a lot more research on the keeping of bees and probably do that next year.
Oh, okay.
Apparently you need to have the right kind of plants or favorable plants for food for them and all this other stuff. You can't just stick it in a concrete lot and hope for the best. You know, there's a little more to it than that.
So. I've heard that recently that they're determining that beekeeping height has relevance in colony survival also, because in the natural, bees are usually much higher than a colony would be for a beekeeper. You know, they're usually like somewhere between 10 and 15 feet up in the air is where they like to build their nests.
Wow. That makes it hard to get to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Which is why no one actually does that.
But I wonder if it would be better positioned. I do have a hill of about 15 feet in my backyard.
Wow.
That is the corner of my yard is the top of that hill, but I wonder if it would be better up there.
I was just thinking you'd turn a pole.
I mean, I could put it on a post, but I have a Martin house for birds.
Ooh,
that's already on a pole. I don't necessarily want some sort of avian fight going on.
Now, how are your neighbors going to be with this newfound hobby?
Already, my immediate neighbor already came over and said, you know, I'm allergic. Just keep them away. But, like, yeah, so, again, research. We need to find out a lot more.
Yeah.
But I do have a 3/4 acre lot. Like if there are positions in my yard that I will have it 100 feet from the nearest structure with ease.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking maybe by the compost, which is at the absolute back corner of my yard. I've got a 4x4 mesh box that I've made that is a compost bin. Back there, it's pretty much no man's land. We don't go really near that often. Probably be a good spot for them, as long as it's not too shaded or too sunny for that matter. I gotta figure out a little more as far as its placement goes. But the hope is that it's a happy environment for bees. Bees are our friends. They're not pests. Honeybees don't bug you. They don't sting you. They're there to do other things.
Fornicate.
So, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of that. Yeah.
How did your neighbor know you're growing bees?
Like, I think Allison must have told her that we were something about it. So, yeah, the thing's not even out of the house. It's in the house right now. It's just in tech, it really, it's in my living room. But
I believe Lee sells a jig for something in bee making.
Of course
they do. I'm serious. Yeah, there it is. I'm on their website. Their box joint jig. Introducing Lee's box joint and beehive jig.
It's probably to ease making the slots for the combs, the comb frames to slide into.
You think it's
this can quote unquote dovetail into your woodworking hobby.
Do you think that lead jig for making the slots for the beekeeping boxes is really just a repurposed CD slot jig?
Oh, it could be.
I don't know. I'm looking at it now. It's something you use with your router. I think you actually mount this jig to some scrap wood, it looks like. But yeah, it could be, I guess.
I just saw recently a magician and card collector, he was showing off his collection, and he said, you know what I just figured out? Cassette tape cases, like, from the 80s. So you had, like, little wall mount cabinets that you would stick on the wall, and you could put vertical pieces of cassette decks.
Uh-huh.
Decks of cards fit exactly in there with room to get your fingers on top and pull them out. But you can, because he has, like, hundreds of decks of cards, and you can just display them like you would CDs of old or tapes of old. And it's just like that the little cavities for those fit a deck of cards. Like,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
So you also mentioned here something about mosquitoes.
Well, yeah. Do you have mosquitoes in Texas? Because they're a bitch right now.
Do we have mosquitoes?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Here's what luckily where I live, I'm up high. So when we're on our deck, they really don't fly up that high. But yeah, if you get down, you'll get killed at some times of the year.
Yeah, I forgot that
they'll swarm you.
You're currently near the water.
Yeah, but Spartan Mosquito Eradicator is what I would recommend.
Hold on, looking. I've got a fogger. I do that, but this spring has been incredibly wet, and I think that has made them just a bitch.
Yeah, I would go to some feed places and stuff. You can buy them on YouTube, but it's like a 1 acre starter pack is like $50, but I think you can get just like two of these tubes. Some people sell them for like $20 for two.
I think $25.
Oh, you do? Okay, Jeff, Spartan.
At jeffersPet.com. Spartan Mosquito. Yeah.
Eradicator. Yeah.
Eradicator. Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it work?
You just deploy them and it supposedly just keeps them away. So
all right.
You just kind of hang them up. But I got some neighbors. Now, caveat here, I've never used them. But okay. I got some neighbors that absolutely swear by them. And they're in my Amazon list because if I ever get too fed up. And I just found out about this a few weeks ago.
Oh, so you just hang them up and go?
Yep.
Huh.
So.
I'll see your mosquitoes and raise your ticks.
Yeah, thankfully we don't have ticks. My son was actually complaining about his practice field. The grass is so high. He said, we could have gotten ticks because it was like slightly ankle high grass. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yeah, it's been a long time since I've even worried about a tick. And that was when I was in Boy Scouts, which I know, Diami, your guys are still involved.
They're coming.
In.
Yeah, well, we pulled 4 ticks off boys this weekend.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, yeah, it's a constant threat.
Yeah.
So did you buy that Lee Valley, what is it, a Swiss Army knife with a tick remover in it?
Yeah, did you see that? It's not even, they got a thing that's just like a single plate.
Yeah.
We have one of them.
Okay.
Current best advice is not to use them because they can leave the heads embedded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does the salt thing still work? Do you just put a little salt on them and they back out? Or do you burn them? Do you match them?
Best practice right now is to take a Q-tip and just kind of rub, like, flick their body back and forth, and it pisses them off when they pull their head out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, they burned them.
Yeah, we used to touch a match to the back of them.
Yeah.
But which is what bad Boy Scouts do.
Anyhow.
Anyhow. All right. No, I'm going to look up that Spartan thing because that does, like, acreage, which is awesome. Yeah, just add water, eradicates mosquitoes for up to 90 days. I love it.
Well, give it a try. Like I said, my neighbors swear by it. And they haven't been that bad this year, so.
Yeah, for whatever reason, we can't stop getting rain, and it's now mid-June as we record this, and it's barely forecasted above the 70s. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm. We're usually warmer than this. It just continues to be cool and wet.
It was a mild winter, too, so it didn't kill them all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, one question I had about the bees. Do y'all get Africanized bees up in your area?
I don't think so. No. I know that's a fear, but...
We live in civil country.
Yeah, right?
We have them down here. They're occasionally an issue, but not near the way it was blown up in the 80s. So.
Yeah. Oh,
they're slowly just moving up and up and up. They're going to cover the whole country ultimately. Like, ticks are moving down and down. You're going to get ticks in a couple of years.
Yeah, well, there's ticks around here. I got ticks when I was a kid, but I don't know. I just don't go camping that much anymore.
Yeah, same here.
Is that?
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time outside just not roughing it in the woods.
Exactly. Well, so do we want to get on to our main topic?
Yes, let's.
I'd say yes.
All right. Well, our main topic for today's show is going to be on finishing. Because why not? I'm currently going through some finishing experiments, so I thought I'd share a little bit about what I'm doing and get y'all's input and see if y'all have some good best practices. But I guess probably the current issue I have is with Osmo. I've been using Osmo for a couple, 3 years now.
Okay.
And when I put it over a painted finish, like a milk paint finish, I've really had some issues with it losing its sheen over time. Have not had that much of an issue on putting it over wood, but the main issue, yes.
When you put it over wood, is that wood fresh off a blade or is that sanded?
Both.
And how high are you sanding it?
220
is
maybe up to 300-400 on the end grain.
Okay. Is the, is the surface of the milk paint just duller than 200 grit sanded wood? And that's why it's not as glossy.
Well, it starts out fine and then it kind of loses its sheen over time. And that's an issue. And you can refresh it, you know, if you put just a spit coat of Osmo back on top of it, that's fine. The biggest issue I have is let's say you're cleaning the chair and you spray it down with water or you spray it down with like a cleaner like Simple Green or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I took a paper towel over it. Well, guess what? Particularly, I first noticed this on that red stool I made. Well, there's a red tinge to the paper towel.
Okay, so it's eating through something of it.
So
maybe not all of it, but
yeah, the finish is really not covering it. And I thought, well, maybe I should just refinish it. So I put another couple of coats on it. Same thing happened again. So I'm really concerned that it's really not putting a protective layer on top of that milk paint.
It's an oil wax blend, right?
Yeah.
So there's no protection in that, or neither oil nor wax provide protection.
Yeah, it does build, and there are plenty of things where people, are spilling stuff on it and just wiping it up and, stuff, and I haven't had that issue. I don't know if it's something with maybe my application method. I don't think so.
I think they're probably having the exact same issue as you. But the difference is that when you're putting it over bare wood, the bare wood doesn't bleed onto the cloth, whereas the milk paint does.
Yeah, I was about to get to that point. That's what I think is actually happening. But I do want to say a caveat. Hey, it could be the way I'm actually using it, but I don't think so. I think
what on a wood project.
Yeah. I think, if it's on a wood project, bare wood, you're just putting it over a stain or just the bare wood, you don't have that problem. But I think it's not really that protective over a painted finish, especially something like milk paint, which, if you wet it, it will, come back up. So
just a symptom more of the milk paint?
Yeah. Well, it's a symptom of the milk paint, but it's also a symptom of the Osmo really not sealing off that milk paint where the moisture or whatever's wet can get to it.
Right.
So the reason that's an issue is if I've ever had somebody for, whatever reason had damp pants or shorts on. You know, let's say there was an accident, they spilled something on themselves or something. I'd hate for them to say, you know, here's a classic example. You got my wife sitting there. She accidentally spills some water or whatever on her. She's wearing white shorts and she slides off the stool. And guess what? You got red or whatever color on those white shorts.
So what you're saying is you can't sit on the stool after Memorial Day.
Exactly.
Right. But you can after Labor Day.
Yes. It's a fall and winter stool only.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
use it accordingly.
And Yami, I totally agree with you. I think the issue is overbear wood. You'd never notice this issue.
Let me ask you, Kyle, the Osmo is not a traditional finish. So, you know, 50, 100 years ago, what would have been applied over the milk paint? What is the traditional finish for this type of application?
Traditionally, it would have been probably just waxed it or, you know, and just dealt with, you know, stains and stuff of that nature. Or they would have probably put some sort of oil with a wax over it. Maybe you can also put shellac on it. You know, so, and of course, you know, probably the last, you know, most of the chair makers I know, so talking the last, you know, 30 years or so are doing, you know, a typical old varnish blend, you know, the three part mixture, you know, put some linseed oil, some, mineral spirits and some oil based varnish together and mix it up and put that over there. So very similar to like, Armor Seal or something of that
nature. Right, but that's at least got that little bit of varnish in it.
Mm-hmm. So yes. I think that seals over it. And, you know, I have a number of chairs that were finished with Armor Seal, and they've held up fine. So, you know, I'm thinking that is my gold standard that I'm looking at, is I want something that can seal and is hard wearing as the Armor Seal. But I'm really looking for a low VOC solution.
Could I ask why?
Yeah. Just because I don't want to stink up my shop and I have to wear a respirator and, you know, all of that, you know, because I finish in my shop. So if I finish in my shop, then basically I've shut my shop down for the day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a low VOC, I could finish in my shop. Then I could move that piece of furniture to the foyer downstairs
where your kiln is.
Yeah exactly. Okay. And just leave it there and it can sit there and cure, and I can, you know, work in the shop.
The issue with moving it outside is the humidity.
Yeah and bugs and whatnot. So
a little bug stuck in your finish is it's a mark of authenticity.
Exactly. It's a feature. It's not a bug.
Let me ask you about the Armor Seal. I know that General Finishes is beloved in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But for my money, Armor Seal wasn't anything special. Like, no. I don't see the difference between Armor Seal and a hand-mixed, you know, oil varnish blend, like hand-mixed wiping varnish for that matter. I don't think there is actually oil in Armor Seal. It's just a wiping varnish.
Yeah. There's some special magic in there, but no, I don't think there's a huge difference between mixing it yourself and using the Armor Seal. I just think that is kind of the look I'm going for, so that's kind of like the standard.
I got you.
I can get something that's low VOC and to do that. So, you know, I've looked at, you know, right now I've done some samples and tested a couple of finishes out, and I've actually ordered some more finish from a different stuff, and we'll get into those. So first off was Trident True Varnish Oil.
Okay, which is going to be similar. It's more of an oil varnish blend than an oil wax blend, so it should still be tougher than the Osmo.
Exactly. It should be. It's got some varnish oil, but it's all natural product, so I think it's got like pine resin or something like that as the varnish. So I've tried that. I've also ordered and tried out the Total Boats water-based marine varnish, Halicon.
What do you think of that? Like, it looked really cool, and then I found out it was water-based, and I wanted nothing to do with it. Maybe it's just my own bias, but
How does a boat friendly finish be water based?
Well, once it cures, it's impervious to the water. It's just they're
okay. It's just
using that as a medium to transfer the solids over. So. I had a sample board when I was doing my stool. I painted a sample board up using the same colors and actually tried those two finishes on that. So the Tried and True Varnish Oil does exactly what I want. It really, color-wise, it does exactly what I want. It really brings out the color of the milk paint. This particular milk paint that I was using, my wife wanted something green, so I used this peacock color, which actually looks like a steel blue, but when you hit it with oil, it turns a deep, almost a British racing green color.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is really cool. And so I tried the Tried and True Varnish Oil on that, and that did exactly what I want. But you know, after, what was it? I think I put 5 coats of that on there over 5 days because you got to let it dry like 24 hours between coats.
Okay. Are you sanding between coats?
No, I'm not on this.
But
it's real thin, it's soaked right into the milk paint. But I really didn't get any, I don't think I got any protective layer on it. And it's really dull. It's a really matte finish.
Okay. That's the tried and true.
That's a tried and true.
Okay.
So on the same piece, you know, taped it off, I tried the Total Boat Marine Varnish and Amber Gloss. The interesting thing about that is you can recoat within an hour. And as long as you recoat within 12 hours, you don't have to sand between coats. And you can build, I did 5 coats in a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Does that build a thick film on it?
It builds up. It does build. The only problem is it does not act like any kind of oil thing. It acts like a water-based finish. In other words, it imparted no color to the milk paint.
Even though it was an amber gloss color.
You know, I kind of ambered it a little bit, but it was still that steel blue color. It didn't change it from that green color like you would if you hit it with a traditional oil.
Now, could I... Not to say that your milk painted furniture is atypical, but if I were to put that on a piece of wood that didn't have milk paint on it, would it provide any ambering effect to it, or would it be just, you know, clean and white, or what do you think it would do on bare wood?
Yes, I did that. I took another piece. This is probably not a good sample board, but I took a piece of cypress I had. The reason I say that's not the greatest sample boards because cypress just sucks. It's very porous and it just sucks finish on. So anything that you would put 3 coats on, you're going to have to put 5 and 6 coats on cypress. But I did use it on that. And it came out. I used it against Armor Seal. And I actually had more amber on it than the Armor Seal did.
Really?
Yes.
But yet the Armor Seal changed the color of the milk paint, whereas it did not.
Well, no, I'm talking about on just bare wood.
Well, no, I understand that. But on bare wood, the Total Boat seemed to have more amber than the Armor Seal. But on the paint, the Armor Seal changed the color and the Total Boat did not.
I think it's just the tint of the actual finish. I don't think it's soaking in and turning the wood or color or anything of that nature like an oil would or Armor Seal would. But I think it's just the tint of the finish because, you know, they do sell it in a clear gloss. So I think they just have some sort of tint in there to, you know, make it amber. The thing I noticed on cypress, and like I said, it's probably a bad thing, bad wood to test it on. I'm going to run some more tests on some other bare wood, like an oak or something. But it did raise the grain a little bit. Not bad, but a little bit.
Okay.
And I didn't sand between coats because I wanted to get 5 coats on there. And, you know, if you really did notice, you probably wouldn't be able to feel it, but I could feel just a little bit. And by raising the grain, I mean like the growth rings, the individual rings, you could kind of tell that one was a little higher than the other one. It wasn't a fuzzy thing like you get, but just kind of raise the grain a little bit. So I think if I was doing it over bare wood, I would probably put 1 coat of that on and let it dry for 24 hours, sand it, and then build the finish up real quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not just build it up quickly? Why let that first coat dry and get sanded?
I think if you put the first coat on, it'll raise the grain a little bit, and you need to let it dry a good 12
hours. Oh, because it's the damn water-based.
Yeah, before you sand it. And then you can sand it and level that surface, and then I think you could build it. So if you build it quickly, like put a coat on every hour or so, you can, you know, you can build up real quickly. And then once that is fully dry over a 24-hour period, then you can come back and lightly sand that and get a really smooth finish. So I think there's some good things to say about that that varnish. And like I said, I believe last time that the Wood Whisperer has that, if you're a guild member, has a 10% off, and you can get like a pint of that for like $13.50 or something like that shipped to you.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah, it's not a bad deal at all. So, and yeah, it's fairly inexpensive. Now, what I'm thinking about doing is actually combining those two. I'm going to let that tried and true probably set up for another week, maybe 2 weeks, and then I'm going to put that the total boat finish over the tried and true and see what I get.
Okay.
Sort of combo. Maybe I can use the old varnish to do that. Now, I don't know if those are going to work well together or not. You know, if you're going to have any issues between, you know, putting a water-based finish over a oil finish, you know, sometimes that's a big no-no. But I figured I would try it, and probably a little bit bigger sample. And then if that doesn't work, maybe I'd try putting a coat of shellac between the two. I don't know. I just kind of like the way this water-based varnish built seems to be really durable and tough. So
okay.
And I think it's definitely going to be something. I got to build some outdoor furniture coming up, and it's definitely something I'll think about. Now, I also have sent away, and hopefully I'll get this week, a couple other finishes, and that is the, I don't even know how you pronounce this, but Livos?
I would say that, yeah. Livos?
Livos, maybe? Yeah, it could be Livos. But it was a finish that Daryl Peart is using, and he posted on Instagram about it, and he's preferring it to his old finish. Apparently, you can buy this stuff in clear and colored finishes. So,
like real colors or like amber?
Like real colors. Like, you know, he has this formula using a dye stain that he stains all his mahogany pieces, and I've used it on a lot of my stuff, and absolutely works wonderful. And then you top coat it with armor seal, and that's kind of been his finishing recipe for years. Right now what he's doing is, I believe, don't quote me, but like I said, he has some Instagram posts on it, so but I think he puts like two coats of their Cocobolo tinted finish, and then a couple of coats of clear over that, and he seems to really like that as his new kind of go-to finish for green and green stuff.
Cool.
So anyway, so I got samples of that. I got a clear sample of this Kunos number 244. They tend to number all their finishes.
Yep.
And then I also got a sample of their top oil, which is supposed to be for durable stuff like countertops and tabletops. And so I got a sample of that. So I'm waiting for that to be delivered, and we'll try that out. Over.
What kind of finish is it?
It's a low VOC finish, and I'm not really sure what's in it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But apparently it's supposed to be, you know, food safe, technical data sheet. Let me see what this.
Well, it's the MSDS.
Yeah, it's not really MSDS.
It's technical data. It's not safety data.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what. It's a safety data sheet. So, let's see what's in here.
For sure, it's known to cause something in the state of California.
Yeah. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. But. So I don't see anything that really jumps out on me on the data sheet, but you know, I figured I'd give it a try and see what I thought about that. And of course, you know, I'm also going to give Osmo another try. I'm going to try some different application methods I've had and armor seal. So what I've been doing over the past 2 days is coming up with a much bigger board that I've put milk paint on. It's oak. One side is milk painted. The other side's going to be clear. And I'm going to kind of use that as my test board.
Okay.
So I'm going to do milk paint first and see how that comes out, and then I'll flip it over and do the raw. But, you know, that's – and if the listeners have any recommendations, I'll be sure to – take them under advisement, but I'm going to go through these first and see if I find something that works for me or a combination of finishes that works for me.
And again, your goal is to find something that you find that is as something that
I would
is
say
similar to Armor Seal, but is low VOC.
Exactly. Any type of wiping varnish.
Have you tried...
It really builds a protective coat that, you know, I don't have to worry about, you know, a finish staining the pants.
Doesn't General make a number of water-based finishes? Don't they make one with an amber tone and one without?
Yeah. Yes, they do.
Have you tried them?
I've tried to spray those years ago, and I didn't have very good results. But I haven't tried just, you know, ragging it on or brushing it on.
I would think that would be the first place to look if you're looking to match their other product. I believe the one that has the amber tone added to it, they did a nice job with it, is what I've heard.
Yeah, but I think anything that's water-based that doesn't have a true oil in it is not going to it's not going to penetrate that milk paint and kind of change the color or deepen the color like an oil would. I think water-based finishes are going to be, you know, they'll just lay on top of it. That seems to be the thought. You know, I think I do have some. That's a good point, though, Diami. I think I do have some in my cabinet, and I'll open it up and, you know, just brush them on and see if it does change the color or not. But I don't think it will. I think that's why the Total Boat Marine Varnish didn't do anything about deepening the color or anything of that nature because it was water-based.
Okay. See, I wonder if you're approaching maybe a three-step process because you want the color to change, but you want a more protective top coat. And so there may not be one perfect one that does all of that in one blow. You may need to apply an oil and then seal that somehow.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. You're right on the spot. I think I'm going to have to maybe use a combination of finishes to get what I want. So
it's too bad you just can't get that color like you want it to begin.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things. And it might be that, hey, I just go with my own wiping varnish or an Armor Seal or something like that. And that's just what I do. And I just put up with the VOCs.
True.
You know, I can air out my shop fairly quickly, but it's still a pain in the butt because just of the humidity and stuff like that. I spend a lot of time getting my shop at a nice humidity level. And I can rack that real quickly in about 3 minutes, and it take it about 2 hours to recover.
Well, I know when I was finishing Liam's door, I did it in the house, in his room, just on sawhorses, and yeah, that stunk up the whole damn place for the better part of a week.
Yeah,
you know, and we have to live in it. I got no place to hide, so I understand.
Yeah, and I think you know, I've heard a lot of people say it, and I agree. You know, I've been dealing with VOCs for years, and I just don't want to deal with them. I don't want to have the full respirator with the cartridges and all that kind of stuff on. It's just not a fun experience. And I really don't mind finishing that much, but, you know, once you put all the gear on, it gets a little tedious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad just got into fiberglass work and got his whole kit up for that.
Yeah.
I was like, Dad, I mean, he's retired. I was like, this is great. And, you know, he did like a boat hull repair, not hull repair. I can't get it back. A motor shroud repair. It got banged up on the dock. And so he totally built this thing out, repaired it, and it looks like new. And everybody on the island that my brother lives on, they're like, oh, you know, really great work. And my dad's like, yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be near that stuff that often. It's fine that I could do it once. I could probably do it a second time, but making a regular activity out of it, it's more hassle than I want to ever deal with.
because mm-hmm. that's just nasty. You can't help it. He's using like a glass fiber filler.
Yeah.
In the fiberglass and epoxy resin, you know, and he showed it to me. He's like, just please just don't breathe in that direction when I have this open, because yeah. it's that much. It'll just go poof and all of a sudden airborne nastiness.
And that stuff, you know, that causes cancer more than just in California.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's so very true. Man, yeah, that's some nasty stuff. I mean, that's almost getting one of those full face shield gas respirator combo things. Yeah, forced air things. Yeah, that would be even better. Yeah, that's a mess. But anyway, any other thoughts y'all have? Or what's your y'all's go-to finish?
You are so more into it than I am. I'm looking at my shelf here. I've got poly, I've got shellac, I've got armor seal in there somewhere. You know, I've kind of just dabbled and nothing. I don't do enough, and I don't spray. I'll say that. So most of it's a wiping finish, whatever it might be. The door I said I did for my son's room, that was poly and then sealed with varnish, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, nothing too much. I keep it fairly basic. I just want something I can fold a rag and blend on, and that it doesn't leave track marks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so pretty basic stuff. Zinsser shellac is what I can see right now. Just a simple 1 pound cut. And, you know, the basics. Yeah, I mean, what do you use on epoxied timber strand? what's the go-to for that?
I'm using a handmade wiping varnish. It's 50-50 or 75-25, depending on what I'm looking for in the thickness. And it's just Minwax poly and I want to say mineral. Dinage charcoal. That's the solvent to use.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, cool. And it works fine. I'm quite pleased with it, actually. I think that combination in most ways is the absolute equivalent to Armor Seal, but personally I think it looks better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started out I guess the first like non-basic finish as I bought like the salad bowl finish. Mm-hmm. But that was when I did the cutting boards, like entering cutting boards, and that I think I thinned that even with probably mineral spirits, I think. Mm-hmm. This is 10 years ago. But yeah, that, I mean, it did the job, and I've seen it, you know, the product years later, and it's not cracking or anything, which is great to see. It's weathering fine.
That's good.
In that application, I'm just absolutely soaking it. I think I lost count of how many applications I did because I kept on going. You know, it's just soaking through an inch and a quarter of material, just like down the straw ends.
Yeah. Well, good. So should we? Yeah, go ahead, Deanna.
No, I was gonna say, have you? You're not approaching the end right now. You're introducing additional products to be tested.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what I will. What I will continue to do is do a little update, but I kind of just wanted to, you know, kind of set up what I'm doing and what I'm trying to achieve, and then I'll fill in as results come forth. So,
hopefully,
you know, a couple episodes from now I'll have an update, and probably 3 or 4 episodes from now I'll come up with something.
I will say that you're doing something that I've never done, and in added color. I am not a fan of staining or anything. I'm trying to always keep a wood finish. So you've opened up a can of worms that I have yet to venture into.
Kyle, what if you applied a layer of shellac over the milk paint before the before say the Osmo or something else?
You can do that. In fact, when you're putting on these thin layers of milk paints, almost a wash coat, you know, as I talked about last time, you know, I got, you know, I don't know what, 6-8 coats of milk paint on this thing, but they're real thin wash coats and they dry, and it dries real, real thin close to the wood. But between colors, you do put some shellac on there, and that can sometimes darken the milk paint up. Sometimes in spots it doesn't. So it's kind of here or there. You're really just trying to put a barrier separator between the two colors. But yeah, that's certainly something to do. And I think at least in my experience with putting shellac over milk paint, I always want to do that caveat. Other people may have different experiences, but you know, when I put shellac over milk paint, I've just basically put on a very, very like half pound cut, you know, and just really quickly put it over there. So I really when trying to soak it in, I'm just really trying to seal one color.
That's better. I would suggest.
Color. Yeah. So, But that's certainly a possibility, and I think, you know, I think you're on the right track here. It's definitely, I think, going to end up being some combo finish. Okay, put this on first, and then top coat it again with this or something like that. I think it's going to be some sort of combination that I'm going to end up doing. Which, but hopefully not. We'll see. We'll see what happens. And that's kind of fun. I like doing this, actually. It's kind of fun to say, all right, let me try this and try this. But like I said, I'll let you know my results. Your mileage may vary because your application techniques or what you're using it for may not be the same as what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But with that said, so fortnightly beer choices. So, Diami, what are you drinking?
Tonight I have been enjoying the Juice Bomb Northeastern IPA from Sloop Brewing. It's an IPA with all the juicy, citrusy flavors of American hops, as they write in the can. It's not bad. I mean, it's not the juiciest. Yeah. It's not the the brightest I've ever had, but it's smooth. It's tasty. It's good.
Good, good. Not well, bad. I've jumped down the cider bandwagon this evening and have a Strongbow gold apple cider. So, it's not bad, not bad. I hear cider is a new thing, so I figured I'd get on top of it.
Is it, or is it just continue to be the same thing it's been? It's good. It's good for the gluten-free crowd.
Yeah, it's gluten-free. It's actually fairly low in calories.
Right.
Let me see what it says on here. Yeah, 162 calories. No fat, no sodium, no carbohydrates.
Wait, that's how you keep that girlish figure.
No, it does have 8% carbohydrates. And it's got 17 grams of sugar in it, though. Which is,
that's from apples.
That's from apples. So anyway, so, you know, it tastes healthy.
Not bad. So I'm taking a slight note from Diami on this one. It's not something I have with me, but I had it earlier today when I was out with friends. There's a local brew pub called Inside the Five here. That if you're curious, it's Inside the Five is a football punter's term. That's their goal to kick it inside the five, or to get it downed inside the five. Mm-hmm. And so this guy is a local guy who went on to play in the NFL briefly and came back to town and is brewing. So I had one there. They had a dark cherry lager called General's Axe. I have no idea why it's called that, but it was good. It didn't taste a ton of cherry in it, but it was flavorful. It's interesting to get a lager that was like almost stout dark brown.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's kind of interesting that's a lager. So I was wondering what it looked like. So
Yeah, pretty cool. Unfortunately, I don't think they distribute anyway, so you can't get it unless you come see me.
Well, there's another reason to come visit you in Ohio.
That's there right. You go. Come on up. We got mosquitoes.
I'll bring my mosquitoes up there. We'll have them, you know, put them in the...
Fight them out.
Yeah. So, with that said, Diami, so where can they... people find you on the interwebs?
Well, on the interwebs, I can be found at Diami Plotke on Twitter or at Penultimate Woodshop on Instagram or Penultimate Beer on Untappd.
There you go.
And Sean, where can folks find you?
I'm at SeanW78 at most every social media that matters, at least, including Untappd.
Kyle, how about you?
Well, you can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram, the one that matters.
And that just about wraps up this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play Music. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. Then you'll never miss any of our exciting episodes. While you're there, please leave us a review.
And thank you for listening. You can visit modernwoodworkersassociation.com. Follow us on Twitter at @MWA_national, on Instagram, @MWA_podcast. You can like us on Facebook, or you can just tell a friend and grab the phone and find their podcatcher of choice and subscribe. All right. So I think what you should do is take the first piece of furniture you ever made, and I'm sure it has a flat surface on it. Go at it with a random orbit sander, get the finish off, and throw like four different finishes on and see which one works best.
That's right.